Oh, yes, I know that the Bible says in Acts 20:35, it is more blessed to give than to receive. And I know that's true. I said, I know it's true that it's more blessed to give than to receive. Now, most of you don't know whether it is or not, because receiving is about all you've ever done. Oh, you may give for Christmas time. You may get an old few rusty cans of green beans and maybe some off-brand cans of hominy and a few broken toys. And you Yankees may give some black-eyed peas that some rebel sent you. And by the way, if you're going to give them to me. But but the truth is, most of the people in this room know very, very little about the doctrine of giving. I mean, honestly giving. Now, some of our folks do, and those who have learned to give can verify that it is always more blessed to give than to receive. Now, it's very blessed to receive. I guess all of us like to receive, and I'm not sure that I like to receive, but I like the love that accompanies a gift. For example, last night, a very fine person brought me some grapes. And when they came for a conference, they brought me some grapes, and I enjoyed the grapes, ate all of them last night before I went to bed. So would that person please take note, they're all gone. And I appreciated the love that prompted the giving of those grapes. Somebody brought me a tomato today. I juiced it and drank it right before church this morning. And now I did not need a tomato. I did not have a tomato at the time, though I've gotten three or four more during the day. But I did not need a tomato, but I appreciated the love that prompted it. Don't you recall that beautiful little story that you've heard me tell so often? Over in the life of David, David one day was sitting or standing looking over the Philistines. The Philistine army was encamped between David and his home city of Bethlehem. And David saw the old well of Bethlehem down at the foot of the hill, and the entire Philistine army was camped between David and that old well. And David got to reliving the days when he used to play down there as a boy. And maybe he said something like this: I recall I grew up down there, and I recall all the fun he used to have. I often say, David said, I used to play cowboy and Indians down there. He was wrong, though. He played Jews and Arabs down there. And boys and girls, now sit still in the front row here and listen to Brother Hiles. And David said, There's the old well I used to drink, from which I used to drink. And nostalgia gripped his soul, and David said, I'd like to have a drink of water again, that old well where I used to play. And it gets so hot and thirsty in the afternoon playing Jews and Arabs, and I can recall how Mr. Kissinger would come by, and I'd give him a drink of water. I'm sure he was going in those days between Egypt and Israel. But some of his men overheard David as he was talking to himself, talking about love to have a drink of water. And so one of the fellows said to the others, other two said, look, you heard what our king wants, don't you? And one said something like, well, yeah, he wants a drink of water from that well down in Bethlehem, but good night. Look at all the soldiers, the entire Philistine army is in camp between here and that well. But one of them said, but you heard our king say he wants a drink of water from that well down there. And I imagine one fellow said, yeah, I know, but good night, we've got wells all up here. Should be easier to get water up here. But he said, that's not the water he wants. He wants the water from that well down there. And so the three fellows fought their way through the entire Philistine army to get a drink of water from David. Now, just to absolutely satisfy his fancy and to give him something they didn't need but just wanted. Nostalgia caused him to want it. Now, I've often thought that was funny, these men fighting their way through the Philistine army. But I thought it was funnier coming back with a cup of water, trying to keep from spilling and fighting all the way. And can you imagine holding a cup of water and fighting your way back? and so forth. And they came back and they said, Your Majesty, here's the cup of water for which you ask. And David was so moved with emotion. My, to think that he had men with such loyalty. In fact, when David died, he made mention of these fellows on his deathbed when he mentioned his mighty men. These three men who fought their way through the Philistine army to get David a drink of water from the well of Bethlehem. And so when they gave the water to David, David was so overcome with emotion and thanksgiving that the Bible says he took the water and he poured the water on the ground. And they asked, David, why did you pour the water on the ground? And David said, I found out the water's not what I wanted as much as I wanted your love. And it is a wonderful thing when folks love you enough to give to you. I love to sometimes I'll hear a noise at my study door. And I'll see some little fingers under the door. And it'll be maybe little four-year-old fingers or five-year-old fingers. I never count how old the fingers are, but there are usually five of them. And so they're sliding maybe a penny under my door. And then maybe there'll come another penny under my door. And then maybe another penny. Look, I wish some of you folks would make those dollar bills under the door. But and I'll watch the fingers. They'll come under. One night I got 78 cents, I think it was, just stuck under the door by the little fingers. Now, they love Brother Hiles, and that's why they do it. These were little boys and girls. Then I saw some long fingers taking it out from under the door. And those were deacon fingers. And so forth. But now, you say, Brother Hiles, don't you feel awful cruel taking 78 cents away from poor little boys and girls? Yeah. Yeah, I felt cruel while I spent it, too. And I didn't need the 78 cents. I need $2.5 million. Anybody here want to stick $2.5 million under my door tonight? You go ahead and do it. And then get ready to hear the shouting, the like of which you've never heard in your life before. But I need the money. No, I don't need 78 cents. No, I don't. But I appreciate that kind of love. And so many things stuck under my door. I'm going to raise the height of the bottom of my door a little bit so bigger things can get under it. But anyway... I know it's wonderful to be loved, but I've learned this, and I mean it. I've learned it, and anybody who's ever tried it knows it's true. It is, honestly, more blessed to give than to receive. I have had people buy me suits of clothes, and I've bought people suits of clothes. And to this day, I get more joy out of seeing a fellow wear a suit that I bought him than I do out of wearing a suit that somebody else bought me. I've had folks to give me money, and I can honestly say, truthfully, no joke, across my heart, hope to die, scout's honor, I can honestly say that it is more blessed to give to somebody who's in need than to receive when I am in need. So I've been selfish and unselfish, and I know the difference. And I know that the unselfish life is the happiest life in the world. You know who the most miserable wretch in this room is tonight? Oh, that miser. That miser. Every time the offering plates come by, you get your billfold out, and you look at it like this, and you pull one out, and you investigate. First, you squeeze, be sure it's just one, like that. And you look at it real carefully, be sure it's just a $1 bill instead of a five. As one fellow put, no joke, honest to goodness, truth, if I ever told it, one guy put out a $5 bill and asked for change, and waited there while Usher gave him change. Usher gave him four ones back, and he kept on waiting. He wanted more change, you dirty tightwad. I was thinking, yesterday had a wedding, and hadn't thought about it in a long time, told the folks who married. I told the young men. I recall the wedding I had down in Henderson, Texas one time. And back in those days, you know, you made about, I'd say $50 a week's pretty good salary. And if anybody got married, $5, well, was something big. Now, I don't take the money anymore, but $5 was something big if you performed a wedding. And a couple came by. I didn't know them, but they had good recommendations, and I married them on the spot. I hardly ever do that, but I married them on the spot, and I don't know why I did. I think I needed the money. I'm not sure what it was. But anyway, a fellow gave me a $20 bill, and boy, I thought, isn't that wonderful? A $20 bill. Praise the Lord. I thanked him again and again and again. I didn't find out for 5 years, till I met that couple one time, that $20 was for their honeymoon. They thought that it cost $1 or $2 to get married, and they're waiting for change. And they had enough. You get a motel room in those days for $5. And so they were going to go 2 or 3 days honeymoon, and I got the 20, and they had to call off their honeymoon. And now honestly, I know that the most miserable wretch in this room tonight is that person that's a tightwad. You're not generous. It is more blessed to give than to receive. It is more blessed to share than it is to have someone share with you. I know that's true. Now, that's why I want to teach you to be generous. She said, you're just a money grabber. Well, we do need the money. But more than I want the money and more than I want this church to meet its budget, I want you to become a happy person. And you'll be happy when you give. And you'll be happier to give than receive. But that's not the message. The message is, it is less blessed to give than to receive. Now you see, you're getting down to my kind of preaching now. No, I'm not talking about money, you skinflint. I'm talking about something else, and you know I am. It is less blessed to give than to receive. There are some things less blessed to give than to receive. One of those, and you know already what I'm going to say, one of those is criticism. Criticism. It is less blessed to give criticism than to receive it. It hurts you the most. That person in this room tonight who has developed a critical nature, and by the way, there's some folks here tonight who have developed critical natures, you say, well, I'm praying for them. You're one of them. Probably. You don't know it. You say, well, how can I know if I develop a critical nature? Well, my office is right over here. You come by the service, I'll tell you. I'll be honest with you. If you want to know if you're one, and if folks think you're critical, I'll tell you what I've heard. And so forth. Let me say this. If you have developed the nature of being critical, I don't mean hating people. I don't mean trying to hurt people. I don't mean trying to run the preacher off. I don't mean trying to get Brother Vineyard fired. I don't mean trying to get Brother Fist to lose his job. I mean one of these little people that nip and criticize. When it's hot, it's too hot. When it's cold, it's too cold. When it's late, it's too late. When it's early, it's too early. When it's right, it's too right. And just always nipping. In the first place, you're hurting yourself more than anybody else in the whole world. You know, you don't really hurt me a great deal. I don't like criticism, but, if there are 10 million people criticizing me, or 10 million and one, I guess I won't worry about it much more because there's one more. But you're hurting yourself, and you're hurting those who are yours. I said this the other night. I do not know a lady who's ever been a member of this church who's been a gossip, and we've had a few. And we have a few now. But I do not know a single one of them who has a child that's in full-time service for God now that he's grown. Not a one. Not a one. If he's, I'll tell you, let me tell you what I heard about. No, you're hurting yourself more than anybody else in the whole world. And then God will not bless your children. I do not know, I said again, of one single critic or gossip who's ever been in this church whose children grew up and amounted to very, very much for God. Most of them don't even go to church. And most of them don't have any confidence at all in the preacher. Say, a young man, listen to this. If you miss everything else, listen to this. A young man came to this altar 2 weeks ago who for 8 long years had wasted his life. Listen to me. He had gone and married somebody he shouldn't have married. He had got a divorce. He's remarried. He's right with God now and serving God in this church. But for 8 years, he wasted his life. I mean, he went into liquor. I mean, he went into bad music. I mean, he went into sin. And for 8 years. And he came to my office the next week after he got right with God. And you know what he told me? He said, I lost confidence in you, preacher. And I said, why? He said, you sent me to a Christian college, and if I called the name of the college, not a person in this room but what would know it. One of the best known Christian colleges in America. He said, you sent me to that college, and I went to the college, and you were criticized, not by the faculty or administration, but by students. And he said, I believed them. And because I believed them, I didn't have confidence in you. And he said, now for all these years, I've been in sin. Why? Some long-tongued gossips at a Christian college. That's one reason why. If a student in Hiles Anderson College criticizes a Bible-believing preacher And I find out about it, he won't do it the second time. He'll be sent home right away. And if a faculty member stands up in Howells Anderson College and criticizes a Bible-believing preacher or Bible-believing church or school, and I find out about it, that faculty member has taught his or her last class in Howells Anderson College. There won't be a second chance. There will not be a second chance. Why? Because we're trying to build young people with Christian character and decency and integrity and principles. And you can't do it being a long-tongued gossip. No, you can't do it. You see, you don't hurt the person you criticize. That those people that gossiped about me, they didn't hurt me. I didn't find out about it for 8 years. What did they do? They hurt that young man. Now, listen to me. They hurt the children he had by his first wife, who are now being reared out of church and without their father. Ladies and gentlemen, and especially ladies, you don't realize the far-reaching consequences of your gossip. I would 10,000 times rather be talked about than talk about. I 10,000 times rather be criticized than be a critic. I 10,000 times rather be hated than to hate. I 10,000 times rather have slander spread about me than spread slander about somebody else by me. Why? It is infinitely less blessed to give than to receive criticism. I have felt the cold north winds of a hostile congregation. I have preached enough across this country for these years. I have felt, standing behind pulpits across America, and by the way, anybody who follows me around knows old Hiles is the same everywhere he goes. I preached the other night to the Presbyterians down in Boone, North Carolina. I'll guarantee you I preached about 2,000 people. I know there are 1,000 of them still there petrified, haven't moved since I left. I know that. I know it. I mean, when we had the closing prayer, good night, people sat there in stunned disbelief. Why? Because I preach the same thing to Presbyterians and to the Baptists. I preach the same thing in Canada, I do in Texas. But I'm saying this, I'm saying I've preached across this country, and I felt the icy, cold north winds of a hostile congregation. But I've walked to my room time and time again with the peace of God in my soul, saying to myself, I'd rather be in my shoes any day than to be in the shoes of those who've been critical of me tonight. I've known the hot blast of gossip. I've felt on my neck the hot blast of people who are talking about me, and all across the country it's true. All across the country it's true. I felt it for over a quarter of a century. I've lived that way, and I know the hot blast of gossip, and I know what they do to my own heart. I know the paralyzed feeling of bad rumors. There's nothing I can do about it. I'm at the helpless mercy of people who want to take what reputation I have and smear it and rev it in the ground. And I know the paralyzed feeling of wanting to do something and know I can't. I simply look up to God and say, oh my God, take my case and plead my case for me. I know something about that. I've felt the prickly thorns of criticism. I know what it is to be exiled with the day's mail and open letter after letter and time after time read letters that are slanderous and dirty and mean and unkind and critical of my ministry. I know what it is to take maybe 5 or 6 letters in one day's mail and put them before me and weep over those letters and say, oh God, if they just knew, I know what it is. I know how it feels to feel another spittle run down this face after having had someone spit in my face in public. More than once I've had people in this town like that and spit in my face, and I know what it is to feel the warm spittle of another's hatred in my face. And I know what it is to wipe off that spittle with the echoes of laughter and jeering as I walk down the street in the city that I love, in the city where I live. I know what it is. I know the feel of the arrow as the arrow pierces my heart when somebody's been unkindly critical. I know the coldness of the dagger when the dagger has come inside the heart because of criticism and because of slander. I felt the piercing pain of betrayal time and time again. I know what it is to sit in a room and have someone whom I've loved and whom I've won to Christ and whom I've tried to help and for whom I've prayed and whom I've taught and for whom I've wept turn their back on me and criticize me and take the very love that I gave them and make that love become hatred for me. I know what it is. I know what it is to cry myself to sleep at night because some of my own preacher boys in year days gone by have turned their backs on me. I know what it is to love people who learn to hate me. I know what it is to do good to people who sometimes do bad to me. I know what it is to care for people who someday don't care for me. I know the pain. If anybody in this room tonight knows the pain of the cold dagger of gossip and the sharp, piercing arrow of criticism and the cold north blast from the north of a cold shoulder and the hot winds of gossip, if anybody knows it, I know it. And yet I'm sorry to say, I have often held the bow that shot the arrow. I'm not proud of it. And God knows I'm working on it. Far too many times in my life, and especially years ago, I've stood, I'm afraid, far too many times and held the bow after I'd shot somebody with the arrow of gossip. And I know how it feels. Far too many times I've held the bloody dagger in my own hand that I've just pulled from someone else's breast. Far too many times I've held the smoking gun of gossip after I'd pulled the trigger. I know what it is to criticize, and I know what it is to be criticized. And ladies and gentlemen, I'll tell you 10,000 times 10,000, it's less blessed to give than to receive criticism. Don't ever do it. Young people, don't ever do it. Don't ever criticize a teacher in school. Don't ever criticize somebody who's a leader. Don't ever criticize the person that's in charge of a Sunday school class. Don't ever criticize your Sunday school teacher. Don't ever criticize your youth director. Don't ever criticize one of the staff members. Don't ever criticize the principal. You're starting a practice in your life that'll make you spend more sleepless nights and break your heart 10,000 times more than it'll ever break anybody else's heart. Oh, dear ladies, tonight, ladies whom I love, and ladies whom I admire, and ladies whom I pastor. Some of you tonight, you're not in danger of breaking my heart, but you're in serious jeopardy of making yourself a witch one of these days. When you get up older and you live in the memories of gossip and what you said on the telephone and criticism of this person and that person, you're not going to hurt me very much. But let me tell you, one of these days, if you listen to me, you'll be glad. You're going to be a miserable, wretched old lady one of these days with nothing but memories of arrows you shot at the reputation of others. And may I say this, my Bible says, a good name is rather to be chosen than great riches and loving favor rather than silver or gold. And if that be true, a good name is more valuable than silver and gold are riches, and I've got more respect tonight for a person who will break in my house or break in Vineyard's house or break in Fist's house and steal every dime and valuable we have. And those of you that will take the reputation, a good name, and write it down with your long tongue and your slander and your critical nature in God's dear name, you ought to be in the penitentiary instead of running free down the streets of heaven. It is less blessed to give than receive criticism. May I say again to you, dear ladies, you say, why ladies? Ladies sometimes have more time than men. And I think men are more prone to stubbornness than ladies and more prone to temper fits than ladies. But I think that gossiping is more uniquely a sin of the ladies than of the men. Now, ladies, may I say this kindly? I don't mean it unkind. Now, I'm not tonight trying to salvage a church, for as I know, we're in no danger of having church problems or church splits. Now, I'm not trying to salvage my reputation. I do not know of a pastor alive who has people that love him and stand with him and fight for him and are hand in hand behind him than the people of this church. But, oh, let me tell you, you are not going to be happy, and you are digging your own spiritual grave. And you're salvaging and bottling up tears that'll flow like a leaky faucet from your eyes one of these days. When you reap a life that's been sown in criticism and gossip. Flee it. Run from it. Hate it. Loathe it. You're the loser.
you're the loser. I'm not going to let people associate me with a critical nature. And I dare you to mention the name Jack Hiles to anybody who knows him. They'll say he's stubborn. They'll say maybe he thinks he's the only one right. And they may say some things about me that are negative. But I challenge you, I challenge you, I dare you to find me one person in America who's heard words of gossip come through these lips in the last 15 years. I dare you. I dare you. Why? I don't want to hurt people. I want to help people. Would you tell me why you'd want to hurt anybody? Would you tell me what there is in the nature of a human being that make him want to hurt somebody else? Why, pray tell me, these men on this platform, Jim Vineyard, he gets cussed and discussed all across America. Why would anybody want to be unkind or hurt Jim Vineyard? One of the most gracious, generous, dedicated, hardworking men I know in the world today. I could go on across the platform. Why would anybody want to hurt anybody else? In God's dear name, don't you become the kind of person who talks about people, criticizes people. Let me ask you a question. Who do you think felt the worst in this story? David had left the city of Jerusalem. His own son Absalom had rebelled against David. Rather than fight in battle against his own flesh and blood because of his love and devotion to his son, David fled the city. His heart was broken. His life was wrecked and ruined. Burden was too heavy to bear. Tears streaming down his eyes. Shoulders drooped, heart crushed, his own son trying to take over his throne. As David goes down toward the dusted trail toward a place called Mahanaim, a man comes alongside the road whose name was Shimei. Shimei gets some dust, throws it on David. He gets some stones, throws them toward David, calls him dirty names. Yeah, you're the one that killed Joab. Yeah, you're a dirty dog. He throws the dust and throws the stones. And one of David's men, Abishai, his faithful servant, pulled his dagger and said, "Let me go chop his head off." And David said, "Abishai, no, don't touch him. It may be that God allowed him to come to teach me a lesson. Don't touch him." And while this Shimei hurls his stones and hurls his insults and hurls his criticism and spreads his garbage like some of you do and throws the dust, David does not even lift up his hand to fight Shimei. Hey, let me ask you a question. Who do you think felt the dirtiest that night when they went to bed? And they pulled their covers up around their shoulders that night and the Sandman came and tried to put sleep in their eyes. And as they looked with themselves, and as David said, "I commune with myself on my bed at night," as they got for this, nobody to talk to, who do you think felt the worst? I know who felt the worst. I've been there, I know. I've gone to bed at night and tried to sleep and tossed and tumbled because people have criticized me. And I've gone to bed at night and tossed and tumbled because I've criticized somebody else. And believe me, the arrow is sharper, and the dagger is colder, and the furnace is hotter, and the chilly winds are colder when I've been guilty of giving it than when I've been guilty of receiving it. Who do you think felt the worst when David was running from Saul for his life? King Saul said, the ladies were singing a song. David had killed Goliath, and the ladies sang a song. Saul has slain his thousands. And David is tens of thousands. And Saul said, "I'll kill him. He's trying to get my throne. I'll kill him." Oh, listen to me. Please listen to me. There is not a disease in this world that has killed as many people as the germ of jealousy. 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 Saul said, "I'll get him. I'll get him." Saul took off to get David, and if it hadn't been for Jonathan, the son of Saul, standing in David's stead, David would have been killed by Saul. And one night, David was sleeping in a cave with his men around him. Saul was looking for David and couldn't find him, and Saul went to sleep outside the door of that cave, not knowing that David was sleeping on the inside. David woke up the next morning, came outside the cave to go on his way and run from Saul, and there he saw Saul sound asleep in front of the cave. David pulled his sword. There's the man about to kill David. There's the man who's tried to murder David. There's the bitterest enemy of David. Now he's asleep. David can pull his own sword and pierce the heart of King Saul and get back at him. David looks at his enemy lying there helpless on the ground. And David takes his sword and cuts off the skirt of King Saul. Somebody said, David, why don't you kill him? And David said, I'll not lift up my hand against God's anointed. Amen. Oh, listen, ladies and gentlemen, God has his hand on a man, and you lift up your hand against him. I don't care how young or how old he is, how perfect or how imperfect, if God has his hand on a man, and you lift up your sword or your voice to criticize him, or you wag your tongue about him, there's not going to be a good thing happen to you about that. David said, I'll not lift up my hand against God's anointed. And David let King Saul live. King Saul awakened and found David, his enemy, standing over him. He couldn't believe it. He couldn't believe it. I wonder when they went off to sleep the next night. And David was running for his life still. King Saul was fleeing after David. I wonder when they went to sleep the next night, wherever it was. I wonder who had the best night's rest. Huh? Huh? Saul, who said, I'll kill him! Or David, who said, I'll not lift up my hand against God's anointed. Oh, ladies and gentlemen, I know it's wrong. I know it's wrong to drink liquor. I know it's wrong to frequent these bawdy houses. I know it's wrong to smoke cigarettes. I know it's wrong to take dope. But listen, liquor has slain his thousands. Gossip has slain his tens of thousands. Cigarette smoking and dope smoking has slain his thousands. Gossip has slain its tens of thousands. And there's nothing so unchristlike. And there's nothing so wicked. And there's nothing so vile as for one human being to lift up his voice in criticism against another. I wonder who slept the best. Lot or Abraham? There was strife between Abraham's family and Lot's family. Finally, Abraham said, Lot, let's be no strife between thy herdmen and my herdmen. You choose what land you want. You choose first. I'll take what's left. And Lot looked down and saw the well-watered plains toward Sodom. And Lot said, I'll take that. I'll take the well-watered plains toward Sodom. That night when Lot went to bed selfishly, Abraham went to bed with an unselfish spirit. I wonder who felt the worst. Listen. There is not a saved gossip in this room. You say, Brother House, I just don't know whether you're talking about me or not. But if you don't know, I'm talking about you. But you say, I don't know if I'm a gossip or not. If you don't know, you are. Flee it. Run from it. It's far less blessed to give it than receive it. Something else. Along the same line, it is less blessed to give than to receive revenge. Revenge. I know the icy blast of revenge seekers. I felt the icy blast of a man who said, I'll get Hiles back. I'll destroy his ministry. I'll get him out of the ministry. Of course, that man's out of the ministry tonight, and I'm still going fairly well. But I know what it means to go to bed at night and know that there's somebody set himself up to destroy my ministry. I know the burning heat of theological liberals. I know what it is to have people say, we'll kick him out. I know what it is. I know what it is. I say with David, mine own familiar friend that betrayed me. I've held the bitter cup of gall. I've bathed in my tears many nights because of people seeking revenge and getting vengeance on me. I know the death-like silence of those who won't speak on the streets. I know what it is to have cold shoulders. I know! But I also know the other side, too. I can recall days gone by before I'd heard such preaching as this and before I'd learned this great truth. I can recall when I sought vengeance. I'll get him. I'll tell him a thing or two. He'll not get by with that. That's as unchristian as drinking liquor. It's heathen. It's pagan. You know why? Because it's not your business to get revenge. It's God's business. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord. Suppose tonight I came out for the board we got to lead the choir. I said, sit down there, fella. I began to lead this choir. I can truthfully say there's no choir leader in America like I am. Suppose tonight when Brother Ober got to sing his solo, Great is Thy Faithfulness, I'd sit down, Ed, big leaguers here now, and I opened my voice with my usual melodious viols. No, that's not V-I-L-E, that's V-I-O-L. And you say, what's Howells doing? Good night. He makes the announcements and begs for the money, preaches a sermon, conducts invitation, reads the names, and baptizes. What more is he? All Broadway's got is one walk up here and wave his hands like he's scared to death for a while and wiggle like a snake in a rainstorm when he leads that choir. Then Howells wants to do it. Howells wants to do it. Suppose when Mr. Helton got up tonight to lead the prayer, I said, sit down, fella, I'm tired of that same old prayer. I do that, you say, now lay me down to sleep. That's what many of you have done. Sit down, I'll pray. You say, what in the world has Howells done? Helton gets to preach once in this pulpit every 50 years. And Howells is here now, and he won't even let Helton say a prayer. Time comes to read the scripture, and I say, Colston, you can't even read. Good night, you trip over the thing, hey, the time up here, and sit down there. And you said, look, that's his job. And then I run up right quickly, and instead of saying, turn me up or turn me down, I go up and say, I'll be back in a minute, folks. I got to go up and turn myself up a little bit. Don't mess with that thing now. When they wake you up like that, you sometimes they just grab something and turn it right quick, you know. sometimes it's the next guy's move on the checkerboard up there, you know. I went up there and I turned the thing. You said, good night. Now he's trying to run the PA system. Yeah, that's their job. I know. And I haven't got any, and you, I've got just as much right to do all that as you do to get vengeance. That's the Lord's job. It's not yours. It's not yours. May I tell you, the person that seeks revenge is hurt more than the one against whom they seek it. The person who gives it is hurt more. More miserable. I know. It's less blessed to give than to receive revenge. I've been Shimei and I've been David. I've thrown the rocks, and I've felt the rocks hitting on my head, and I know that Shimei's are more wretched and miserable than David. I've been the one who hurled the criticism. I've been the one who received it. I've been the one who pointed the arrow and let the bow fly. I've been the one who held the bow and the one who received the arrow. 10,000 times would I feel the arrow in my heart than feel the bow on my hands. I've been both Saul and David. I've been the one occasionally, thank God occasionally, who saw my enemies where I could have destroyed them, and I did not do it. And several times, I'm afraid, I've been the one who sought vengeance. And I know I've been Saul, and I've been David, and I know David felt better than Saul. And I know it's more blessed to be David-like than Saul-like. I've been Abraham, and I've been Lot. There are times in my life when I have been selfish. There are times when I wanted it for myself. There are times when I've been unselfish. Not many, but some, thank God. And I know it's more blessed to be unselfish than to be selfish. I know it's less blessed to give selfishness than it is to receive it. I know that. I know it. I've been Jacob and I've been Esau. Can't remember that story about Jacob who stole Esau's birthright and stole his blessing from the father on his own father's deathbed. And Esau says, I'll kill him. And Jacob runs, because Jacob's mother, God bless poor little old Jacob. I've often said, when I get to heaven, I'm going to punch Jacob in the sissy nose. I hate a sissy worse than anything. You say, not supposed to hate anybody. Well, nobody is perfect. But I hate a sissy. The other day I was preaching on a program, and the pastor where I preached introduced me. He walked up to introduce me. Here's how he did it. And I wanted to squash him. I wanted to just squash him. He said, how you know Jacob is a sissy? I'll tell you how I know he's a sissy. When Esau was out hunting, he's home making chili. Anybody would rather make chili and go hunting, there's something wrong with him. Jacob's mother says, sweetie face. He said, how you know she said sweetie face? It's in the Hebrew right there. She said, sweetie face, you better run, because Esau's going to get you. For 20 years he was gone. Finally he heard the call of God saying, go back to Bethel. And Jacob knew what that meant. He knew if he went back to Bethel, he had to make it right with his brother. And brother, if you get right with God, you'll make it right with your brother or sister too. And you'll ask God to forgive you for your slander and vengeance. So Jacob comes. He gets to the place called Jabbok. He goes across the river. And the folks, he gets away from the rest of the people. Tomorrow morning, he has to face Esau. Esau, from whom he stole the blessing. Esau, from whom he stole the birthright. Esau, who's vowed to kill him. And Jacob has to face him tomorrow morning. And Jacob wrestles all night with God. He says, angel of God, spirit of God, Christ of God, I'm not going to let you go. He hangs on. The angel says, I got to go. Jacob says, I'll not let you go. And all night long he wrestles with God. The next morning he faces Esau. He says, Esau, I'm sorry. Oh, those are words you ought to learn to say. Those are words you ought to say every time you feel that you've wronged anybody. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. And Jacob says, Esau, I'm sorry. He fully expects Esau to pull his dagger and pierce his heart and take his life. But Esau says, Jacob, forget it. And Jacob says, here, I've got some gifts for you. And Esau says, no, you take them back. I don't want the gifts. And there that morning, those two brothers who for 20 years had been alienated made it right with each other. Jacob got forgiveness, and Esau sought forgiveness, made it right with each other. Now, I've been Esau, and I've been Jacob. I've been Abraham, and I've been Lot, and I've been Saul, and I've been David, and I've been Shimei, and I've been David. And I know, and you know it too, that those who seek revenge and vengeance are miserable, unhappy, wretched people. Saul was the greatest king, the greatest person in all of the land till Saul decided to get vengeance on David. And when Saul let jealousy grip his soul, it wrecked his life, wrecked the kingdom, and ruined his entire reign. It'll ruin you too. I probably shouldn't say this, but I think I will. I was teaching the soul winning course in Dallas, Texas last Tuesday afternoon. They said 4,000 people. And my good friend of many years, Bill Harvey, was my center. I do not know of a greater center in the world, so I chose Bill. And Bill and I are very close to each other. We're together a lot, and we kid each other a lot, like Brother Vineyard and I do. Brother Vineyard, he kids me about being bald-headed. Of course, I'm not kidding him, because he really is. But anyway, Bill Harvey, I was winning Bill Harvey the Lord, and I was showing how you ought to introduce yourself. And I was the soul winner. He was the sinner. And I said, Mr. Harvey, where are you from? He said, Houston, Texas. And I said, well, we're glad to have you here in Hammond. What brings you here? He said, I'm here to drive a truck. Well, I said, that's fine. Do you have any children? You know how you do when you go soul winning, trying to make friends. He said, yes. I said, you have pictures? Yes, I have four children. He pulled out his billfold and showed me his pictures. And I said, Bill Harvey said, yes. I said, they look like you. And then I said some little insulting thing. Didn't mean it. I didn't mean to hurt him, and didn't hurt him. But it was something I shouldn't have said. And all the rest of the soul winning course, I kept wishing I could take it back. And it wasn't unkind. It wasn't critical. I cut up with Bill about the subject a lot. But I wished I hadn't said it. And you folks over there, remember that when I got through with the whole thing, I apologized to everybody. I said, Bill and I are good buddies. We're good friends. We love each other. And sometimes I,
I guess that on the spur of the moment I say something I shouldn't say. And I said, I want to ask Bill to forgive me, and I want you to forgive me because I wouldn't say it to hurt. And, of course, he did forgive me, and it wasn't any bitterness at all, just kidding, but I'd gone a little too far with it. And I went back to my room, and I got to thinking of all the things I've said I wish I could take back. For the help, and I got to thinking way back yonder years ago when I was in a church down in Florida one time. It's been 20 years ago. I criticized a man of God. I got to thinking about it. Listen, I've done as much for that man of God as I've done for anybody in the whole world trying to make up for it. I got to thinking about one time about 20 years ago, maybe 18 years ago, when a preacher and I had a fuss, and I said some things I should never have said. Oh, listen to me. Listen, I try. And yet those words I said that I shouldn't have said, they hound me like bloodhounds and haunt me like a spook at night and make every house a haunted house. Don't say them. Don't say them. Vengeance is his, not yours. It's less blessed to give. Thirdly, it's less blessed to give unkind words than to receive. It's less blessed to give unkind words. The filthiest words possible have come through these ears of criticism against this preacher. More than once I've looked down the barrel of a gun pointed toward my head with a threat from the lips of the bare holder of the gun that he was going to blow my brains out. I got news for him. You can't blow my brains out. There ain't no brains there. More than once, I've been called the dirtiest. Think of the dirtiest name you can think of tonight. Think of the filthiest, dirty, four-letter words you can think of. I've been called it numbers of times. Think of the anonymous letters I've received and sometimes even letters that are signed. Unkind things. Hear the shrill of the phone that seems like a funeral dirge at midnight or 2 o'clock in the morning. I picked it up again and again and again to hear someone say words to me and about me and give me threats you wouldn't believe. I've lived in a glass house for 28 years. I know what it is to receive unkind words. But I'd rather receive 10,000 of them than give one. It's less blessed. Ladies and gentlemen, I said this morning. We're near the end. We're near the end of this age. Somebody tonight reminded me that Mr. Kissinger is suggesting a pact with Israel, a peace pact between the Arabs and the Jews. On the newscast out in California, I heard, and some of you folks heard the same thing. I heard about that peace pact. Do you know how long peace pact he's suggesting they make? 3.5 years. Huh? 3.5 years. Mr. Kissinger doesn't know he's fiddling around with Bible prophecy, does he? 3.5 years. When the Bible says that's exactly how long the peace pact's going to be between Antichrist and God's people. Ladies and gentlemen, these are not days to play around. These are not days to be critical. These are not days to sit in judgment. These are days to mean business for our God and give all we have to God. Over in Revelation, you recall in chapter 16, isn't it, where it talks about the mark of the beast. It talks about the days going to come, the tribulation period, when there'll be a mark on the forehead and in the hand of people. No man can buy or sell unless he have that mark in his hand or in his forehead. Let me read you a letter one of our dearest ladies wrote to me, and I won't read her name, but I won't read you a letter. This is one of the finest, most refined, intelligent ladies in our church, one of the dearest members we have, dear Brother Hiles. In the light of what... I've thought of writing you this bit of information for some time, but have just neglected to do so. Maybe you already know of it anyway. The Bible study of last Wednesday night reminded me of it again so forcefully. A few months ago, I heard a young man speak who had just graduated from a state college in Missouri. Are you listening? A state college in Missouri. He had just received a degree in accounting. He told of attending a seminar held with the IBM company. I didn't say a little offshoot company, IBM company. And that at this seminar, there was discussion concerning a method of marking a person's hand or forehead. Uh-oh. Marking his hand, forehead, with an invisible mark. And that person's purchasing power would be automatically recorded when he or she passed before an electric eye or beam. Then the only delay in being able to use this was the fact that it has not been perfected to the point where the mark will not wash off or wear off after a while. The young man speaking said this could be checked out through the IBM company. This idea fits perfectly with the mark of the beast. I thought you'd like to perhaps find out this information. But look up. Your redemption draweth nigh. When IBM Company does this, it makes you wonder if maybe the God of this book wasn't pretty intelligent 2,000 years ago after all. Now, what am I saying? I'm saying quit playing around. You haven't got time to sit around and criticize. Our Lord's coming very soon. Look up! Your redemption draweth nigh. Have you been receiving it or giving it? Who have you criticized this week? Who have you sought vengeance against? No, I don't want you to spend a lot of time tonight going to people. I want you to go to God. I'm not concerned about you going to anybody and asking forgiveness. I'm concerned about you going to the God of gods and saying, "Thou who didst feel the cat of nine tails on thy back, and thou who didst hear with thine own perfect ears the imperfect words of crucifying people, and thou who didst see a nation you love put you on a cross, and thou who didst feel the cold nails through your fingers and hands, and thou who didst hear the angry mob say, 'Crucify him, crucify him!' Thou who could say, 'Father, forgive them. They know not what they do.' I suggest if you want to be like him, you say the same thing to those who slander you and criticize you. I have lost hours of sleep because folks have criticized me. I have lost weeks of sleep because I've criticized others. I have remembered the words that some people have said against about me and against me for days. I've remembered the words that I've said about them for years. Critical words I hear about myself go with me to my bed at night. Critical words I say about others will go with me to my grave one night. It is less blessed to give than to receive. Anything you ought to do tonight? Huh? Any corrections you ought to make? It's your life. It's your conscience. They're your children. But whether you feel tonight or not, this truth, it'll wreck your life. I'm thinking tonight of a preacher out of the ministry, eaten up by bitterness, eaten up by critical nature. I know the great men of God. I know them well. I know God's great servants. I know the giants. Few of them sit in judgment against him.